proud to be here with our allies in the fight for affordable health care.
I'm Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Ahmed Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo de Landeros Tiede has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News.
I'm Michael Newman, KBOO News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a new report shows new Oregon jobs do not pay enough to cover basic living costs for families. President Bush signs a new national space policy claiming Bush's right to deny access to outer space for anyone, quote, hostile to U.S. interests. And the Sudanese president has said that peace talks in Darfur will continue despite the refusal of militia groups to agree on peace plans.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, as of today, there have been 2,782 officially acknowledged deaths of American soldiers. IraqBodyCount.org reports as many as 48,783 civilians have been reported killed by military intervention in Iraq. A new report released by The Lancet puts the number at more than 600,000 civilians dead.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 18, 2006, 20 days into the 2006 midterm elections. I'm Noah Eaton.
And I'm Afif Ahmed Shafi. Democratic Ted Kulongoski and Republican challenger Ron Sexton both tried to clinch the deal with voters yesterday in their most widely televised debate of the campaign season. As in previous debates, the stark differences between the two candidates were apparent on issues such as the role of the government, the state's tax structure, and the environment. Kulongoski, a seasoned debater, repeatedly equated Sexton with the corporate elite and out of touch with middle-class voters. But Sexton held his own, countering that the governor had failed to change Oregon for the better, despite the state's improving economy and increasing tax revenues. 7 out of 9 of Oregon's daily newspapers, including the Oregonian, have endorsed Sexton.
The area's strong economy is producing jobs, but many of those cannot pay enough to cover basic living costs. That's a major finding of the 2006 Hunger Factors Assessment, a biannual survey of emergency food box recipients in Oregon and Clark County, Washington. The Oregon Food Bank Network conducts a Hunger Factors survey every 2 years to assess the factors that create the need for food assistance. This year, 121 food pantries distributed the survey to emergency food box recipients during a 3-week period in April. Oregon Food Bank analyzed the data from more than 3,000 completed surveys, which represent a balanced sampling of households served throughout Oregon as well as Clark County, Washington. Nearly a third of the recipients, 21%, said they need help because their wages are too low. This is a change from 2002 when 19% of recipients named low wages as a reason for needing help feeding their families.
Portland police officers this week were cleared of wrongdoing in the in-custody death of James Chassie Jr. KBOO's Mike Munkvold has more.
A Multnomah County grand jury late Monday found no criminal wrongdoing by the Portland police officers involved in the in-custody death of James Chassie Jr., a mentally ill man who died following a struggle with the officers on September 17th. Chassie's death sparked outrage throughout much of Portland, especially against the Portland Police Bureau. Dan Handelman of the citizen activism group Portland Cop Watch called the jury's ruling a wasted opportunity.
There's never been an indictment, as far as we know, ever, of police officers for on-duty use of force. We thought this case might be different because it seems so blatantly obvious that the police went way overboard with a man who had no drugs in his system and wasn't drunk and wasn't armed. Apparently, the grand jury disagreed that there was any criminal conduct.
Handelman also criticized the official autopsy report by state medical examiner Dr. Karen Gunson, who ruled Chassie's death an accident. He says the extent of Chassie's injuries, including broken ribs and chest trauma, were not consistent with an accident, and that such a ruling improperly influenced the jury.
In order for her to call it an accident, she had to try to get inside the heads of the officers and know what they're thinking. And part of her report was saying the officers didn't intend to do this. And how she knew that before there had been any kind of investigation is beyond my comprehension. So it's our assertion that determination was made specifically to influence the grand jury's decision to make them think that it was an accident. It's pretty clear that the police bureau is playing up this angle that this whole thing was an accident of some kind. But you don't break somebody's ribs in 16 places and drive some of the shards that broke off into their lungs by accident. But when you're beating and kicking and punching people and, you know, throwing your body weight down on top of them and tasering a person multiple times and punching them in the head, which is what these officers did, you must know that your actions might end up killing the person, because that's what your training would tell you.
Jason Renaud of the Mental Health Association of Portland, who knew Chaussee in high school, has worked with the Portland Police to develop a crisis intervention training program to teach officers how to safely interact with mentally ill people. He says more officers need to take the program, which is voluntary.
A small percentage of street officers have had the full training. It's a voluntary training, which means that the officers who need it the most often don't get it. In 2005, Chief Derek Foxworth made sure that all officers had 2 hours of crisis intervention training, which is a big step forward. All officers got 2 hours. So they did the right thing by moving forward on more training last year. We're hoping, I think it's essential that Chief Sizer have all officers trained and certified by CIT within the next 6 months.
Renaud says Chaussee's death reflects a challenge for the Portland Police to establish a stronger relationship with the mental health community.
Well, it's sad and sickening that we don't have the mechanisms in place to prosecute clear injustices like this. The question's now not about justice, but about trust. And nobody, Jim didn't die of his mental illness. And he didn't die because of his mental illness. He died at the hands of law officers. And our question is really about the trust. Can we trust our law officers?
I'm Mike Monkbold, KBOO News.
For drivers, the Food and Friends program is... The need for drivers in the Food and Friends program is critical in Eagle Point, Central Point, and Medford, Oregon. Kathy Smith, administrative assistant for Food and Friends, said that there are 8 home deliveries in the Gold Hill area since the meal route was reopened, adding that while most meal sites are open 5 days a week, Gold Hills are only open on Monday and Thursday. Volunteers deliver 13,000 meals each month to individuals living independently at home who for health reasons cannot make their own meals. Food and Friends are a nonprofit organization. The bulk of funding comes from federal sources and about 9% comes from donations. If you would like to become one of these valuable volunteers, call 541-734-9505.
The current time is 5:08. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River. As we ask for you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio, please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. And now, time to go to Membership Central.
Hey, it's me, Lisa Loving, over here. We're having a super cool party over here in the, what I like to think of as the Palace of Pledge. And we are basically passing the hat for KBOO tonight. 503-232-8818 is the number to call with your contribution to this incredible nonprofit institution. Toll-free outside the Portland area, 1-877-500. KBOO. And tonight, for really big ticket items, special deal, we're offering for a $150 pledge. We've got pairs of tickets to Al Gore's speech Tuesday. It's at the Rose Quarter. It's $150. We're asking a $150 contribution for a pair of tickets to see Al Gore this Tuesday at the Rose Quarter. You have to pick up the tickets at KBOO, and the only way you're going to get them is by calling 503-232-8818 or toll free 1-877-500-KBOO. And, you know, one thing I like to do is ask people to make a contribution of 1 hour's wage per month. So if you're making $7.50 an hour, then $7.50 an hour is about $90 a year, and that's a wonderful, handsome pledge as well. And, you know, when you join KBOO and you by calling 503-232-8818 or toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO, KBOO. You know, you make your contribution, you get a card in the mail, and it has your name on it. You become a card-carrying member of KBOO, and that card entitles you to discounts at dozens of businesses and organizations all up and down the Willamette Valley and some in the Gorge as well. And those are discounts you get all year round. So when you make your contribution to KBOO, it pays itself back. And those discounts are everything from coffee shops, bagel shops, home remodeling businesses to licensed massage therapists, counselors. I believe there's a pet psychic, which is kind of my personal favorite. Haven't taken any of my pets there, but what the heck, sounds cool anyway. And, you know, one of the things I really like about the KBOO membership benefits that you get, when you listen to our underwriters, when you see who offers these benefits, that tells you that you're part of a bigger community. And, you know, the KBOO community, it's not just, you know, and we're asking you to call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO. You're not just throwing money at a box. You're not just throwing money at the radio. You're joining something. You're becoming part of a movement. You receive rights. You get to vote on the KBOO board of directors. Who's on the board of directors? You get to vote on whether or not we change our bylaws, our rules that we use to operate with. But in any event, we're asking people to call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO. $150 minimum pledge. We're offering a pair of tickets to the Al Gore lecture this Tuesday night at the Rose Quarter. That's for $150. The tickets are a $90 value. And you have to come and pick the tickets up at KBOO on Monday. So in just a couple seconds, we're going to go back to our evening news broadcast. But again, I just have to put it out to you. This is really an important resource, and we need to hear you supporting that by calling us at 503-232-8818 or toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO. You can also join online at www.kboo.fm. And many people are coming in person. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. We're a half block south of Burnside. So I'm ready to go back to the news, and want to thank all the people who have called this period, and we'll give you another opportunity to get on the bus with us soon. So Noah and Afifa, back to you.
One in every 100 children is born with a heart malformation, but the genetic causes are still largely a mystery. Researchers have found genetic mutations that appear to play a role in the development of Down syndrome. These mutated genes can also play a role in the most common heart defects. The study focused on DS individuals, who are 2,000 times more likely to develop heart defects than the general population. This focus will help researchers zero in on the offending genes. So far, no single gene or set of genes has been shown to contribute to the risk of heart defects, either in DS individuals or the general population. If such genetic problems can be found, it may help fight heart disease.
A judge says he will issue a ruling on Friday to decide whether Astoria Mayor Willis Van Dusen must surrender his driver's license for a year. Van Dusen refused to give a blood alcohol test after a collision with a motorcycle this past September. He was cited for driving under the influence of intoxicants. The Astoria mayor is seeking a fifth term. Witnesses on the day of the collision, including the medical technician in the ambulance, all reported smelling alcohol on Van Dusen's breath. He told the technician he had lost count of the numbers of drinks he had consumed. Van Dusen had two previous drunk driving arrests in 1989 and 1994.
The American Cancer Society has opened a resource center in Salem, the first of its kind in Oregon. The center is part of a recent national-wide effort to provide convenient locations for finding information about cancer types and treatments, said Mandy Holland of the American Cancer Society. The center features a staff table with brochures and a computer that the public can use to access information online. It is located on the first floor of the Center for Outpatient Medicine at Salem Hospital.
And now, time for another edition of KBOO's homegrown environmental series, Our Backyard, produced and hosted by our good friend Edison Carter.
Welcome to Our Backyard, locally produced reports and commentary about issues affecting food, water, and air quality in our backyard. This edition, seemingly small actions can have big consequences. More and more, we are finding that our world is not nearly as vast and limitless as we once supposed. Not only is it interconnected, but it is this very interconnectedness that drives it. Dr. David Suzuki, the award-winning scientist, environmentalist, and broadcaster, wrote that recently in a weekly column he does for Canadian newspapers called Science Matters. His eloquent words about the relationship all species have with each other reminds us again that unintended consequences are seldom anticipated. Most people have heard of the butterfly effect, the idea that a small change, such as a butterfly flapping its wings in one part of the world, can set in motion a series of events that leads to a big event, such as a tornado somewhere else. In an interconnected world, even a creature as small and seemingly inconsequential as the tiny shrimp-like krill can have a big impact. These 1 to 2 centimeter long creatures already play an important role in the ocean food chain and are a staple in the diet of some of the world's largest whales. But krill are so small that few would have suspected they could play an important role in generating currents that help mix our ocean waters. And yet, that's exactly what a team of researchers from the University of Victoria found off the coast of British Columbia's Vancouver Island. The researchers looked at a deep ocean inlet where different layers of the water mix very little. They found that thousands of krill on their nightly upward migration from the deep water to the surface to feed increased the mixing of water by 3 to 4 orders of magnitude. In other words, these tiny creatures actually caused quite a stir. And it turns out that all living organisms that exhibit similar behavior can cause turbulence, helping to bring cold, nutrient-rich water up to the surface. This exchange of cold and warm water is vital to the productivity of the oceans. It also helps break down human wastes, and it even plays an important role in the climate. Before, it was thought that this turbulence was largely driven almost exclusively by physical forces like the winds and the tides, rather than by biological forces. The very idea that the behavior of individual organisms could affect entire systems seemed fantastic. Yet researchers in Victoria now conclude that sea creatures themselves may be a critical but overlooked source of turbulence in the oceans. If this is the case, the authors conclude, then the overfishing that has caused fish stocks to plummet and the near extinction of many whale species due to hunting may have disrupted ocean turbulence enough to have affected the planet's climate. And in a seemingly unrelated story last week, Portland City Commissioner Randy Leonard, who oversees the Water Bureau, announced that Water Bureau vehicles would convert to B99, a fuel that is 99% biodiesel and 1% petroleum diesel. Vehicles that run on biodiesel put less particulate matter into the air, burn cleaner, and reduce nitrogen oxides, which cause pollution. No one can argue with the environmental aspects of this, Leonard declared. This move not only helps keep the air clean, but it could help pave the way to create jobs in Portland. Leonard said the city is in talks with a company that is considering building a biodiesel plant. This is something that could be an important aspect of our economic development plan for the city, he said. If we can pull this off, and I'm hopeful that we can, then we're going to create jobs and do our part by not relying as much on sources of foreign oil. Leonard also said he's talked with farmers across the state. He's headed to Eastern Oregon this month, in fact, to meet with still others, and thinks there's enough support to build the biodiesel-producing plant. Well, all that sounds great, but a recent spate of reports this summer questioned the rush to biofuels. One report, the most optimistic, submits that biofuels can only supply about half of our transportation needs by 2025, but if we do, food supplies would be compromised. Most experts peg maximum production far lower, supplying perhaps only around 10% of our fuel needs by 2025. These critics say trying to use fuel farming to replace oil will actually only replace a fraction of it and end up degrading the present level of the carbon sink effect of conservation reserve land and sustainable farming practices that build soil organically by recycling biomass. They go on to say, the illusion that fuel farming actually can solve these problems is a dangerous one. It makes the release of methane from permafrost inevitable as CO2 levels continue to rise, and that will overwhelm the climate system. And how can anyone envision agricultural yields actually increasing with ever-increasing weather volatility? More and more, we are finding that our world is not nearly as vast and limitless as we once supposed. Not only is it interconnected, but it is this very interconnectedness that drives it. In our world, indeed, even in our backyard, we are all butterflies, and we need to be mindful of what can happen when we flap our wings. And in the meantime, keep listening to KBOO News and Public Affairs and stay informed. After all, this is our backyard.
The current time is 5:19. Still to come on the KBOO Evening News. Hear how your hair strands may indicate possible eating disorders you have, according to new scientific research. The so-called Coalition of the Willing takes another hit today, as Slovakia prepares pulling out of Iraq this February. And hear the solution New Delhi officials have conjured up with dealing with monkey mayhem. Or so they hope. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River.
Tonight, we're asking for you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio. Please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. Time now, once again, to go to Membership Central.
I like to think of it as the Palace of Pledge, and I'm Lisa, and we're basically passing the hat for KBOO tonight. And the number to call, 503-232-8818, or toll-free outside the Portland area. It's 1-877-500-KBOO. You know, you can also make your contribution online at kboo.fm, and lots of people are coming in person. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. It's a half block south of Burnside. We're really encouraging people to take advantage of the opportunity to get a pair of tickets to Al Gore. He's speaking here in Portland at the Rose Quarter Tuesday night at 8 p.m. And that's for a $150 contribution. Those tickets are worth $90. It's two people get in, and you need to be able to come and pick those tickets up at KBOO. And you also need to be able to pay your pledge in one lump sum to be able to get that special happy thank you gift. But as I was saying just a few minutes ago, there's so many membership benefits that accrue when you call 503-232-8818. You get the monthly membership guide. You get these wonderful discounts at dozens of businesses all over our region. And also, you get the satisfaction of knowing that you're supporting something important. My friend Robin Shanti says, money is energy. And when you make a contribution, when you call us up, 503-232-8818. When you call us up and make your contribution, it's more than just throwing money at a box. It's an investment in our own community. And you know that when you invest in real community, that money, it moves, it grows legs, it supports all kinds of initiatives. And you know, we don't get a big hairy check from the government here at KBOO. Almost all of our operating budget comes from you. So, studies have shown that, only about 10% of listeners contribute their funds, and we'd like to push that envelope and just encourage more people to contribute by calling 503-232-8818 or toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO. Really encouraging people to go for the pair of tickets to see Al Gore this Tuesday night at the Rose Quarter. That's for a $150 gift to KBOO. That show is at 8 p.m. Al Gore in Portland, Tuesday night at the Rose Quarter. You have to be able to pay that whole $150 in a big lump, and you must be able to pick up the tickets here at KBOO. We're going to actually front you the tickets as opposed to names on a list. So you need to be able to come here and get them. But that's going to be an incredible deal. And the number to call, 503-232-8818. We like to encourage people to do what I call the electronic fund transfer, where you come to the phone, you have a copy of your checkbook that's got your bank information. We scribble it down on a super top secret form and send it to you to be signed. Then you return it to us, and we take a set amount out of your bank account once a month. It really is the kind of thing that you set up, and then you don't even have to worry about it. And you know, this is kind of about you not worrying about the fate of the earth. This is about you knowing that your money is invested in something that's making a difference here in Portland. People that listen to the KBOO News, I think you're probably well aware that the federal government, the Bush family, sees Portland as what they call Little Beirut. You know, for years, KBOO's been at the center of Portland's activist community. And I think that that's exactly what you're paying for when you make a contribution by calling us at 503-232-8818 or toll free outside the area 1-877-500-KBOO. 500 KBOO. You're making an investment in activism. You're making sure that there are people out there that have the time, the effort, the knowledge to agitate for social change. That's what this is about. It's not just a comfortable contribution. This is dangerous radio. And in just a couple minutes, we're going to go back to Noah and Afifa. Noah produced the news broadcast tonight. He's been in this building for approximately 6 hours putting together this news broadcast. Our broadcast is put together almost entirely by volunteers. I'm the only one who's paid to be here. And to be honest with you, it's an incredible enterprise. It takes about 50 volunteers to put out this one-hour show. I know there are people at home listening, and they don't have the time to come down here and volunteer. But like I said, money is energy. So share your energy with us by calling 503-232-8818 or toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO. Again, we've got special tickets, a pair of tickets to see Al Gore Tuesday night at the Rose Quarter in Portland, Oregon. That's for a $150 contribution. He starts speaking at 8 p.m. You have to be able to pick up the tickets here at KBOO on Monday. So you can call us even though we're not asking you to in that beautiful moment. The number is 503-232-8818 or toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO. And now it's time to go back to Noah and Afifa. Thanks to all who called.
Lieutenant Montgomery Scott once said on Star Trek The Original Series, "The best diplomat that I know is a fully loaded phaser bank." Apparently, this notion rings true in the White House as well, as President Bush today signed a new national space policy rejecting future arms control agreements that might limit U.S. flexibility in space. Further, this new policy asserts Bush's right to deny access to space to anyone, quote, hostile to U.S. interests, unquote. The document is the first major revision of space policy in 10 years. It has three components: emphasizing security issues, encouraging private enterprise in space, and characterizing the role of U.S. space diplomacy in terms of persuading other nations to support U.S. policy. Quote, "Freedom of action in space is as important to the United States as air power and sea power," unquote, the policy asserts in its introduction. Observers noted the military has become increasingly dependent on satellite communication and navigation, as have providers of cell phones, personal navigation devices, and even ATMs. The administration said the policy revisions are not a prelude to introducing weapon systems into Earth orbit. So just a couple of words of encouragement for all you aspiring space hitchhikers listening. Have your towel with you at all times, and may the Schwartz be with you.
President Bush has considered and rejected the idea of splitting Iraq into semi-autonomous regions. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson says this could be an option for reducing conflict in the country. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow, asked today to respond to Hutchinson's comments, said the Bush administration determined partitioning was not a wise option for the stability of Iraq or the region. Hutchinson said in interviews with Texas newspapers that allowing the Kurds, Sunni, and Shia to govern their own territories while sharing in Iraq's oil revenues could be a way to end violence in the country. But she also said such a plan would take more American troops. Hutchinson said she discussed the idea with former Secretary of State James Baker, who is advising Bush on Iraq, but he disagrees. Baker has said splitting the country would lead to civil war.
Republican U.S. Representative Pete Hoekstra fought several key decisions in the war in Iraq, giving the overall U.S. effort a, quote, grade C. The House Intelligence Committee chairman gave his critique of President Bush's management of the conflict during a forum on the war yesterday at Grand Valley State University in Michigan. Hoekstra cited the decision in 2003 to disband the Iraqi army and police, saying it proved to be a very bad decision. "It was made worse," he said, "by the failure of U.S. troops to secure weapons depots around the country, in effect arming thousands of Iraqis hostile to U.S. goals." Hoekstra also criticized Paul Bremer, who headed the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq from May 2003 to June 2004. Bremer ordered the demobilization of the entire Iraqi army, a decision critics said fanned the Iraqi insurgency. Hoekstra compared the commitment in Iraq to teaching a child to ride a bicycle, asking rhetorically, "How long can you ride alongside the bicycle before you let go?"
Washington State Green Party candidate for Senate Aaron Dixon was arrested yesterday when he refused to leave the King TV studios during a scheduled taping of a debate amongst Senate candidates. FSRN's Mark Taylor Canfield has more from Seattle.
Let him go! Let him go! Let him go!
The candidates at the debate included Senator Maria Cantwell, a Democrat, Republican Mike McGavitt, and Libertarian Party candidate Bruce Guthrie. KING-TV President and General Manager Ray Hecox said Aaron Dixon, a former co-founder and captain of the Seattle chapter of the Black Panthers, was prohibited in participating in the debate because he did not meet their qualifications for public support and fundraising. Dixon was told he was not allowed to enter the building, but he did so anyway as an act of civil disobedience. A crowd of supporters outside the studios protested the actions of debate organizers and the arrest of Dixon for trespassing by the Seattle Police Department. This is Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle for Free Speech Radio News.
With Republican Ken Blackwell trailing by double digits in almost every poll, Blackwell's campaign yesterday tried to link his Democratic opponent in Ohio to child sex predators, and a state Republican spokesman even raised questions about Ted Strickland's sexuality. Blackwell charged that Strickland should have known that a man arrested for exposing himself to children was on his congressional payroll. Tuesday, Blackwell's gubernatorial candidate released three police reports from Athens, Ohio, with identifying information blacked out. He claimed that Strickland had covered up an AIDS 1994 arrest, failing to fire him when he worked for Strickland from 1997 to 1999. He also suggested Strickland backed a U.S. House resolution supported by a group supporting pedophilia, charging that he had voted in stride with the North American Man Boy Love Association.
Social Security checks for nearly 50 million Americans are going up in 2007. However, next year's 3.3% increase is smaller than this year's increase. The cost of living adjustment will translate into an average monthly increase of $33 for the typical retired worker, pushing the average monthly benefit up to $1,040. The cost of living adjustment will go to more than 53 million people who receive Social Security benefits.
Insurers make up the world's second largest industry and stand to lose the most if climate changes raise sea levels. Finally ready to address the problem, policy writers are offering incentives to go green. Next week, Travelers, a giant insurance firm, will offer owners of hybrid cars in California a 10% discount. It already offers a discount in 41 other states and has cornered a large share of the market. In addition, this fall, the Fireman's Fund will cut premiums for green buildings that save energy and emit fewer greenhouse gases. When it pays off claims, it will direct customers to environmentally friendly products to replace roofs, windows, and water heaters.
Enterprise Rent-A-Car will commemorate its 50th anniversary by pledging the unprecedented gift of 50 million trees over the next 50 years to the National Arbor Day Foundation. The U.S. Forest Service will help to plant these trees, 1 million of them each year, in national forests located in the United States, Canada, and Europe to restore areas damaged by fires, storms, and disease, as well as to help expand and preserve habitats for endangered species. The Enterprise gift to the National Arbor Day Foundation is the largest in the charity's history. To put this gift into perspective, there are 25,000 trees in New York Central Park. Planting 1 million trees a year would be like planting a new Central Park every 10 days for the next 50 years.
Hair strands reveal evidence of a person's diet and can help doctors diagnose eating disorders, researchers at Brigham Young University reported. Researchers found differences in nitrogen and carbon levels when comparing samples taken from females with and without eating disorders. They said they were able to accurately determine the source 80% of the time. The lead author, Kent Hatch, said hair acts like a, quote, tape recorder. Just as it can be used to determine if someone has used drugs or has been exposed to harmful amounts of mercury and lead, hair can show what someone has been eating. Larger studies are planned to possibly develop a test that can be used in clinics. The research was published Monday in a journal called Rapid Communications in Mass Spectrometry.
Greenpeace scored a meaningful victory in its efforts to halt overfishing in the North Atlantic. At least a third of the cod taken in the Baltic is taken illegally, severely hampering recovery of fish populations. On October 2nd, with Greenpeace insistence, Russian authorities began detaining a set of five ships known as the Trawler Girls. This is a set of five notorious ships that have been blacklisted by the European Union, Iceland, and two prominent fisheries commissions. The ships under Georgian flags were blacklisted because they have been involved in illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. They continue to overfish for many months despite their blacklisted status.
The current time is 5:34. And now, time for another Half Loon Daily Commentary from yours truly, Jim Hightower.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to people in the news who have their tongues running 100 miles an hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober is J. Willard Marriott, the right-wing honcho of the multi-billion-dollar hotel chain. J. Willard is supposed to be a smart business guy, but when it comes to understanding anything about getting along with local folks, Mr. J.'s head is a cluster bomb of stupidity. He recently buzzed through my town of Austin, Texas, where his outfit intends to raise an entire downtown block and throw up not one, not two, but three Marriott hotels on the site. Problem is, the rubble that his bulldozers would create includes Las Manitas, a Congress Avenue eatery that is a true Austin icon. This small, funky place, owned by the Perez sisters, not only serves up bodacious handmade Mexican food, but it's also a beloved center of political gossip and social activism. As a result, a robust Save Las Manitas campaign swept the city, and both the mayor and the project developer rushed out to assure the outraged citizenry that somehow this Austin treasure will be accommodated. But then, J. Willard bowled his way into the fray. In an explosion of ignorance and arrogance, this gooberhead thumbed his royal nose at the Perez sisters and all of Austin. "Why should you hold up a several hundred million dollar investment because of a small little restaurant?" he asked. "The restaurant can relocate and should relocate," he sniffed. This is Jim Hightower saying, attaboy, J. Willard. You might as well have climbed atop the Texas Capitol Dome and urinated on us as to throw that snotty public tantrum. Besides, Marriott already has three hotels downtown. Let him move. Austin now officially hates this bully. To keep track of King Marriott's effort to shove our small little restaurant around, go to SaveLasManitas.org. SaveLasManitas.org.
This Jim Hightower commentary has been brought to you by the United Steelworkers, the union committed to winning every employee's right to choose representation free from fear of being intimidated or fired. Visit us on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Stay tuned for Circle A Radio at 6 p.m. following this newscast. At 7, it's nonstop hip-hop with DJ Audio. Tomorrow's weather, there's rain early, then remaining cloudy with showers in the afternoon. High around 60 degrees. Chance of rain is 90% with rainfall around a quarter of an inch. And for the Columbia Gorge, expect a 70% chance of showers with a high of 63 degrees. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News, Portland, Corvallis, Vancouver, and Hood River.
The current time is 5:37. Tonight we're asking for you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio, so please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818, or if you live outside the River City, 877-500-KBOO. And now it's time to go back to Lisa, who is at the Palace of Pledge.
Actually, I'm joined by my super cool friends, Ani and Isaac, and when you hear their voices, you'll know exactly who they are. Take it away.
Good evening, good evening. This is the Palace of Pledge. I like looking at it that way. And we invite you to come down 20 Southeast 8th, pay your pledge in person or make your pledge in person, get a tour of the station, meet the folks that bring you the news, that make radio happen here at KBOO, and know that you are a part of making radio happen here at KBOO. If that's not convenient to you today, you can take a moment right now and dial 503-232-8818. Or outside the Portland dial-in area, we'll pick up the dime, maybe even the 45 cents now, I don't know, 1-877-500-5266. And we want to thank you. We want to thank you when you call in and pledge. We are looking to raise $400 right now during this newscast this evening. This is locally produced news. Edison Carter's In My Backyard piece. That is radio worth supporting. Edison has gotten his news training here at KABU. He started out as a volunteer about 2 years ago, answering the phones during a membership drive just like this. And over a few months' time, he was talking to me and saying he wanted to be a news producer. Well, where else but KABU can you say, can you do that? Can you learn those skills? 503-232-8818. Support that effort. Isaac.
And that's exactly why I like to call this the membership mothership instead of the Palace of Pledge, because KABU is all about getting folks involved. This is really a community effort and a community space. I mean, our radio broadcast is now covering a much wider area than when we first started out 40 years ago.
That is for sure.
And that constitutes a digital community of which we're all a part of. As soon as you turn your dial to 90.7, and I think that we can all really feel the value of being a part of that community, and we just need financial support right now so we can keep this digital gathering space going, because it's such a valuable part of so many Portlanders and Oregonians' lives at this point. So give us a call if you want to support this membership drive at 503-232-8818, or outside the Portland area, 877-500-KBOO. Great to hear those phones ringing. I want to hear some more ringing during this break.
Absolutely. It's great to have that support. It gets us all happy. We applaud. We get excited. I want to let you know, if you call with a $150 pledge, you get a pair of tickets to Al Gore. I know Lisa was talking about those just a little while ago. It's true. You can do it. Al Gore will be here Tuesday night, October 24th. That's next Tuesday night. He will be at the Rose Quarter. And for a $150 pledge to your very own community radio station, you support independent media, you support grassroots democracy radio, you support this KABU community and the community around you with your membership, plus you score a pair of tickets to go see Al Gore speak.
Awesome.
And it's a good deal all the way around. Just dial 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818. You know, I love the cooperative environment. And again, I'm going to go back to Edison Carter. He was talking about how all things are connected in this biosphere, you know, and the butterfly effect, and how everything sort of affects everything else, and how krill turbulate the ocean. It's really cool stuff. I want to say this is a community that works very much like that. And your actions right now affect this entire community. And this community has the power to affect the world. And you can be a part of positive social change by dialing 503-232-8818. Hey, Isaac, we got some businesses who have supported KABU today.
That's
through donating food and refreshment for our volunteers. Who's that?
Well, we've got some Cooper's Coffee, kind enough to donate, as well as our dinner is going to be provided tonight by Old Wives Tales and Palm Beach. Thank you very much to those restaurants for that. It looks like it's just arriving now.
Look at that, Palm Beach coming through the door.
Yes, wonderful. Now, this is we know that these membership drives break up the flow a little bit of the news, and it's a fun time down at the station, but in general we would rather just give you the whole hour of news. But I just want to point out that this one couple of week period where you have to listen to us pitching at you, is the trade-off you get is almost a full year of advertising free radio, which is amazingly valuable in the media market that we're now living in, where you can't walk out your door without being bombarded by sights and sounds of corporate America.
That's so true. I mean, that has great value in and of itself. And actually, it is a full year of non-commercial radio, because these aren't commercial breaks. These are breaks where we offer you an opportunity to really jump on in. This isn't media made by other people and packaged up and given to you to swallow whole. This is media you participate in. It is community media, and you are the community, n'est-ce pas? I have to steal that line from Utah Phillips every now and again. 503-232-8818. Participate, just like Isaac was saying. Isaac is somebody who started out, he's in college, and he wanted to have an internship. He wanted to learn about radio production. He wanted to learn radio skills. And he has been so involved in the news department. It's been really great to watch you, really learn radio and to be involved in KABU. I love KBOO success stories just like you.
Yeah, and I found it very empowering just to be able to turn on the dial and feel like there's actually a station in this town that understands me and can represent me a little bit. And I think that there's lots and lots of listeners out there who feel the same way. And if there's other young people listening now who don't feel like they can afford the $150 pledge for the Al Gore tickets, really anything helps. For myself, I do an electronic funds transfer, which I don't even notice coming out of my...
That's the coolest thing. And you know, we had people this morning actually call up and say, hey, I haven't noticed that coming out of my account for, like, a few years now. I'm going to up it. I'm going to up it $5 a month because I can, obviously, do that. If that might be something that applies to you, my friend, take this moment right now and do it. 503-232-8818. We have about $150 left to raise during this news broadcast, and we can do it right now with your help. Won't you dial 503-232-8818?
That's awesome. We're getting close, and I really want to encourage people to come in person to 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon, half block south of Burnside. Now we are going to go back to Afifa and Noah. Thanks to the people who dropped by and called.
Murder charges have been brought against four U.S. soldiers accused of raping and killing a 14-year-old Iraqi girl and her family. The commander of the 101st Airborne Division today referred murder charges against the soldiers for the alleged crimes that occurred in Mahmoudiya, south of Baghdad, in March. Two of the soldiers could face the death penalty if convicted in the murder of Abir Qasim, Hamza al-Janabi, her 5-year-old sister, and parents. The soldiers charged included 23-year-old Army Specialist James P. Barker, who testified before a military tribunal that he held the girl down while she was raped by another soldier, Sergeant Paul Cortez, age 23. Barker said he then attempted to rape the girl himself before she was shot to death by former Private First Class Stephen D. Green. Also charged in the case are Privates First Class Jesse V. Spielman, age 21, and Brian Howard, age 19. Two more soldiers from the murder suspect's troop, including Thomas Tucker, 25, of Madras, Oregon, were killed in retribution for the murder of Abir and her family.
10 U.S. soldiers were killed yesterday in an attack on American forces battling sectarian violence in a Sunni Arab insurgency. The bloodshed brings to at least 68 the number of U.S. troops killed in October and is likely to bring renewed attention to the Iraq war in the run-up to U.S. congressional elections in November, 20 days from now. With 2 weeks to go until the end of October, the pace will likely make it the deadliest month for U.S. forces since January of 2005. In July, the U.S. toll fell to 43, but rose to 65 in August and to 71 in September.
Prime Minister Robert Fico of Slovakia has announced the withdrawal of its troops from Iraq next February. There are about 110 Slovak troops in Iraq as part of the U.S.-led coalition. Stationed in the Polish sector of Hilla, the troops have been largely occupied with mine clearance rather than frontline fighting. Fico, who was elected in June, promised in his campaign that he would withdraw the contingent as soon as he reached office. However, he has decided to commit the troops, mostly army engineers and security personnel, to a further 6-month tour set to end in February 2007.
In more positive news from Iraq, a group of Marines and ex-Marines who fought in Iraq is featured in a beefcake calendar being sold to help wounded veterans. One of the group's leaders, Rudy Reyes, who served 2 tours in Iraq, is on the calendar's cover, said, quote, "It's a stopgap effort to help people whose government programs leave off, and a way for citizens to help citizens." The calendar is being sold by a San Diego-based nonprofit called Freedom Is Not Free. They helped injured service members and their families with such expenses as travel, mortgage and utility bills, and special beds for burn victims.
Though Iraq has overall been falling on dangerous and somber times, students at Mosalla Secondary School have something to cheer about. Their school is the first of 6 to be renovated as part of a program funded by the Commander's Emergency Response Program, authorized by Congress to restore Iraq. The commander of the 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division, joined the governor of Kirkuk and local education officials at the ceremony marking the reopening of the schools. School supplies such as paper and pencils were donated by individuals stateside.
The United Nations envoy to Sudan, Jan Pronk, says the Sudanese government recently lost 2 major battles against rebels in the Darfur region. Writing on his personal website, Prunk says the losses occurred last month in Sadir and last month in Karaka. He says many soldiers were wounded in the battles and many taken prisoner. Prunk also says morale among government soldiers in North Darfur has gone down, and that some have refused to fight. The latest violence involves the Sudanese government fighting a new Darfur rebel group known as the National Redemption Front. The rebel group claims that it won the clashes.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir said yesterday that the negotiations with groups refusing the peace agreement in Darfur would continue. The statements came after Bashir met with a delegation from the Sudanese National Unity Authority. This authority's spokesman said further talks will also be held with Eritrean groups that refuse to sign the Darfur peace agreement. Some groups refused to sign the Darfur peace agreement last May on the claim that the agreement did not meet their demands.
Eight African leaders have recommended extending Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's term for another year. This is an attempt to revive stalled peace talks. The leaders who met in the Ethiopian capital also said that Prime Minister Charles Konan Bani should be given more power. The Ivory Coast has been split in two since rebels seized the northern half of the country in 2002. Widespread fighting ended in early 2004 when a peace deal was negotiated, but neither side has disarmed and the country remains divided.
The UN Refugee Agency says thousands of Burundian refugees are to resettle in the U.S. after almost three decades in Tanzania. The 13,000 refugees who left Burundi in 1972 were first displaced from Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The move is part of a scheme to reduce the number of displaced people in western Tanzania. There are around 200,000 Burundians currently living in UN refugee camps.
Young asylum seekers and refugees are to be given free clowning lessons at taxpayers' expense to help them adapt to life in Britain. Youngsters aged 12 to 25 will learn slapstick routines, how to tumble, silly walks, and how to fall over during a course of 9 theater workshops estimated to cost up to a total of £2,000. Organizers at the Belgrade Theater in Coventry said the classes, which will also teach clown face-up, make, and mime, are designed to boost the self-confidence of the youngsters. Tory party members of parliament have branded the course as a waste of public money. One lawmaker even said, quote, "It seems the lunatics are in charge of the asylum."
A civil servant has become the first ever female to serve as an elected member of Bahrain's parliament. 18 women are among 221 candidates competing for one of 40 seats in November's election. Latifa Al-Jiyud was the only candidate who registered to run in her region, meaning she has technically already won a seat. Six women currently serve in Bahrain's upper chamber of parliament, but they were appointed, not elected.
Most big cities in the world face the same kinds of problems: traffic, pollution, crime. Then there is New Delhi, which has a challenge rarely encountered elsewhere. Monkeys? There are now 5,000 monkeys in Delhi. Hungry rhesus monkeys prove to be the biggest pests, roaming their urban center in search of open windows and tempting food. To deal with such a rare urban issue, Delhi has come up with an unusual response. It's launched a monkey arms race. Companies and city officials have started employing langurs, large black-faced apes, to protect buildings and scare off the smaller rhesus monkeys. Monkeys and humans have long coexisted in India, where Hindus consider the primates sacred. In the ancient Sanskrit epic, the Ramayana, the monkey god Hanuman symbolizes wisdom, devotion, righteousness, and strength. Talk about making monkey magic out of monkey business.
And that's the KBU Evening News for Wednesday, October 18th, 2006, marking the 1,857th day since Bush made the declaration that he'd catch Osama bin Laden dead or alive. If you have any questions or comments about what you have heard this evening, please call us at 503-231-8032 and leave a message on extension 203, or send an email to pmnews@kbu.org. That goes for news tips as well. Call us with your news tips at the same number, 501-503-231-8032, extension 203. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM, on Translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM. On Translator K220HR, you can log on to our website at kbu.fm. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Noah Eaton. Our assistant producer is Mike Monkvolt. Our wire editor is Prentice Darden. Tonight's audio editor is Noah Eaton. Special thanks to reporters Edison Carter and Mike Monkvolt. Our engineer is Brianna Loringer. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. I'm Afif Ahmed Shafi.
And I'm Noah Eaton. And coming up tomorrow at 7 a.m., here's the KBOO Morning News. At 7:30, Joanne Bowman hosts Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. In the first part of the show, her guests will be members of the Flying Focus Video Collective. They are celebrating their 50th anniversary this month. Beginning October 23rd, they will rebroadcast over 500 handmade programs on cable access television. At 9 on Press Watch, host Teresa Mitchell speaks with Wayne Madsen, investigative journalist, columnist, and author who has covered Washington politics, national security, and intelligence issues since 1994. His newly published book is, quote, Jaded Tess, Big Oil, Black Ops, and Breastplates. At 10 on DIY Portland, Julie's topic is What Grassroots Radio Can Do for the World. She'll play some gems from the KBOO audio archives, and she'll have cool thank you gifts from Microcosm Publishing for those who become members. At 10:30 on Art, Julie David Rosnick, a local artist who was featured in the recent Oregon Biennial exhibit. And at 11 is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. That's all right here on KBOO, your nonprofit, volunteer-powered, and listener-sponsored community radio station. Volunteer with our humble broadcast by calling 503-231-8032 or extension 203. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, and I'm Lisa Loving, KBOO Evening News Director. It looks like we're about $50 away from our goal, actually. And my super cool friends, Ani and Isaac, are going to tell you how you can push us over the top. Don't you just want to go over the top sometimes?
I want to go over the top.
I do, too, definitely.
Take us over the top. 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818.
And I just want to say thank you to the lovely couple we just had come in off of the street, wanted to become members, wanted to see the station. I think that's a really wonderful thing that people can walk right in. We're on Southeast 8th and Ankeny, just off Burnside. Come in and see the station. It's really important to see the people and the place behind the media that you consume. And this is one of the few stations that's completely open to you. So help us pay the electricity bills. Help us train more members. Come in and get trained yourself. Give us a call, 503-232-8818. We're $50 away from that goal for the evening news. If you appreciate our non-corporate daily, twice daily news broadcast, give us a call. Let's hear those phones ringing.
503-232-8818. I want to thank Don in Portland. I want to thank James in Vancouver. And this is so super cool. I want to thank David. David currently lives in Santa Barbara, but he called in and he said he's still a Portlander in his heart. Thank you, David, for still supporting your community radio station up here in Portland. If you are in this area and you realize how lucky you are to have a resource like KBOO, this is the time to step forward and support it. 503-232-8818. KBOO is one of the oldest listener-supported community radio stations in the country. We are the oldest surviving independently owned and operated radio station. Listener-supported, non-commercial, community-owned. We have been going since 1968, and it's all been with your support. So right now, there is actually a growing movement for low-power FM, for grassroots media democracy, and you can be a part of that wave. It's a beautiful thing. It is the only answer to corporate-owned media, filtering your information and manipulating it in all varied ways. This is the time you can step up right now and say yes to that grassroots media. Those numbers again, Isaac?
503-232-8818, or outside of the Portland area, you can give us a call toll-free at 877-500-5266. Call up and give 1 hour's wages. I've heard that's a popular way people give 1 hour's wages per month. If that sounds fair to you, give us a $60 suggested minimum donation, or help us get right over the top for our goal of this show and give us $50 donation at 503-232-8818. 8818, your community radio station. It really is yours. Come in and make use of these tools, of this training, and empower yourself to be a part of the media. Get your voice out there. There are fewer and fewer avenues to be heard in a mass broadcast type situation. Love to hear those phones ringing at 503-232-8818.
503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. We still have a few tasty thank you gifts left for your donations. We have, in fact, a book called Blood and Oil by Michael Clare, exploring the dangers and consequences of America's growing dependency on imported petroleum. You could get a copy of A Power Governments Cannot Suppress by Howard Zinn, a new classic of documenting the struggle for a better world, the struggle from underneath. You could get Armed Madhouse, a signed edition by Greg Palast, looking at our insane foreign policy and interconnecting it with this neo-fascist administration. 503-232-8818. These are thank you gifts we want to give you when you call and pledge your support to community media. You know the thank you that you get all year long is fabulous programming, great information, and a station that empowers you, the community. 503-232-8818. And now Circle A.
And the time is 6 o'clock. Stay tuned for Circle A Radio right after this announcement.
Attention nonprofit job seekers, Portland's largest networking forum, Idealist.org's Nonprofit Career Fair, will be held at Portland State University on October 19th. This is an opportunity to connect directly with representatives from as many as 60 to 70 organizations in one space about current and future employment, internship, and volunteer opportunities. Additionally, free information sessions offering nonprofit career advice will be available to all job seekers. The fair will be held in the ballroom on the third floor of the Smith Memorial Student Union at Portland State University on October 19th from 11 to 3 p.m. For more information, go to idealist.org/fairs. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of this event.
Loretta Ross has a 25-year history in the women's movement, working to end violence against women and to promote reproductive justice in the United States and internationally. She has written extensively on African-American women and abortion and organized two national conferences on reproductive rights for women of color in 1987 and 2003, respectively.
Loretta Ross is a co-founder of the Sister Song Women of Color Reproductive Health Collective. The collective is made up of 76 grassroots organizations and more than 400 individuals, as well as white and male allies who support the goal of improving the lives of indigenous women and women of color in the United States through reproductive justice. Loretta Ross became national coordinator in 2005.
Tonight on Circle A Radio, it is our honor to talk with Loretta Ross about her history in the women's movement, the reproductive justice movement, and the fight for women's self-determination, human rights, and American exceptionalism. Stay tuned.
Well, my name is Loretta Ross, and I'm the national coordinator of the Sister Song Women of Color Reproductive Health Collective, which is headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia. And we're a coalition of women of color and allied organizations representing Latina, African American, Native American, and Asian Pacific Islander, Middle Eastern, and Arab American women who work on reproductive health issues around the country. We're a coalition of organizations as well as individual members. And we're approaching our 10th anniversary in 2007, because we were founded in 1997. and we're having a conference next year called Let's Talk About Sex. How did I become radicalized? Well, it started with my plumbing. I was a victim of rape at a fairly early age when I was 11 years old, and then I had a baby when I was 15 who was born out of incest. At the time, I was trying to put all of those things behind me, but I was fortunate enough to be in Washington, D.C., where I went to college, and D.C. was the birthplace of the movement to end violence against women because the first rape crisis center in the country was founded in Washington, D.C. in 1972. And so I was convinced by a friend to come volunteer at the center, and eventually I became its third executive director. And that was my introduction to the women's movement. And then I found out through working at the center that I was not alone, that all these things that had happened to me happened to millions of women in America and across the world. And I have to say I've been a passionate feminist ever since because I was pissed off.
Loretta, can you give us a definition of what reproductive justice means?
Well, reproductive justice is a framework that women of color created in 1994 after we returned home from the International Conference on Population and Development in Cairo, Egypt. And what we recognized is that women around the world were using the human rights framework to assert their reproductive rights and their reproductive freedoms. When we returned home, we found, of course, that the predominant pro-choice movement was using a privacy framework around choice for asserting their reproductive rights. And we were committed to bringing human rights home, to really looking at how could we talk about reproductive rights in a human rights way. That need was born out of our understanding that every time a woman is pregnant, she's not just considering whether or not to have the baby, but she's considering, does she have health care? Will she get beaten if she tells her partner she's pregnant? Will her job fire her for coming to work and telling him that she's pregnant? She's considering a whole host of human rights issues that are usually beyond the scope of the pro-choice movement. And so when we first conceptualized reproductive justice, we thought of it as reproductive rights married to social justice equals reproductive justice. But it is our expression of the fact that we have to connect up the dots in women's real lives. That is not just, am I pregnant, am I not, and what I'm going to do about it, but can I afford to have a baby? What if I have to terminate a baby that I really wanted to have, but I can't have because I had health insurance? What about the violence? What about the economic injustices, the other human rights issues in our lives? And so since then, the framework has really caught on. Sister Song decided to popularize it in 2003 after our first national conference. And it has become the framework that speaks to people's needs who know that it's about abortion, but it's beyond abortion. So it's by no means that we are not diligent about protecting abortion rights, but it does say that we have to go beyond abortion rights and look at the other human rights issues that affect women's lives. We believe that there's three things that we have to fight for in terms of a woman's self-determination to control what happens to her life and her family and her community. First, of course, she has to fight for the right to terminate a pregnancy if she does not want to continue one, and to prevent pregnancy as well, so her right to use contraception and not have pharmacists refuse to give her emergency contraception and all of that. But the second set of rights is about the right to have the children that you want to have. For women of color, this is a particularly acute set of rights because we have been subjected to reproductive oppression, population control strategies. I would argue that this current anti-immigrant movement is a form of population control, a form of reproductive oppression. And not only the right to have the children that we want to have, but the right to parent the children that we have. That's the third set of rights, because communities of color are particularly vulnerable to the forced removal of our children for a whole lot of spurious reasons, whether or not the child is attracted to the criminal justice system, our pushed out of school through the tracking system. Foster care ends up taking a lot of our children simply because many families of color can't parent the way the white norm thinks they should. For example, we were called in to help groups in Virginia because there's a city in Virginia that was rewriting its housing code, its occupancy code, saying that if there was a family of more than four people, then that four people needs to be at least in a three-bedroom house or apartment. Well, what that does is, of course, make a lot of people homeless who don't conform to that norm of three bedrooms, two kids, and a white picket fence. And so we fight for the right to not have children, the right to have children, and the right to parent children. And that separates us from the normative discourse in the pro-choice movement.
Hey, and you're listening to Circle 8 Radio here on KBOO 90.7. We're going to go over across the room to our pals, Ani and Mo over in Membership Central. Oh, and EB too. We got a whole flock of folks over here telling you why you need to open up your wallets and pledge to KBOO tonight.
That's right. You do. It's because of the programming you've just heard. Circle A Radio has long been one of my favorite programs on KBOO, and it's because, in fact, of their perspective, being anarchist, being feminist, being for the resistance, being for social justice, digging deep to find voices you don't hear other places. That's why I love Circle A Radio. And Loretta Ross is an amazing voice who certainly fits that category. We don't hear from her. You know, we don't hear from her when it comes to pro-choice issues. And why not? I don't know. She makes so much sense. I saw her this summer speak in Madison, Wisconsin, and it was one of the most inspiring speeches I had heard in quite some time. Her voice, her perspective is so important. Talking about the full range of reproductive rights, not just the right to choose to terminate a pregnancy or not, but what reproductive rights truly means from the radical perspective, from the root. What it means as women, what it means as feminists, what it means, you know, for our culture. 503-232-8818. Support this endeavor. Support this kind of radio. Hey, Mo, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks, Ani. It's really great to be here in the station helping with the pledge drive. I've long been a listener of Circle A Radio, and one of the things that makes Circle A great is part of why KBOO is great. Some years ago, I received a call from a kid out at a tree sit, and we got a Willamette Week reporter out with another tree sitter. They went out there, and on the way back, Jody Darby put together a news on the fly, straight from the guy coming back from the tree sit, gave all the news before anybody, and of course it didn't show up in the Oregonian. It was only on KBOO. It was only on Circle A. It was right before logging season, right after logging season started. It was really exciting. And that's one of the reasons why I bought my father a membership to KBOO today during the Veterans Show. Because if you're like me, a DIY anarchist type person, I don't always get along with my dad. And so I thought, he's retired, he's on the internet, I can get him a membership to KBOO, give him $40, and then he can talk to me about Democracy Now, he can talk to me about Tongan radio music, he can talk to me about Metaquiasin, whatever he's interested in, I know about it from KBOO, and we will have a place to talk.
That is very cool. I like when that works.
Yeah, I'm hoping it will. My dad's really, I mean, he's really one of the reasons I'm on this path, and I don't understand why it doesn't merge more, but next year he's going to be pledging. That's my vow next year. He's going to be pledging, matching my pledge. So please call us. Buy a membership for the person in your family or life that maybe you're having problems talking with. 503-232-8818. If you're out of the state, if you're in Vancouver, call us at 1-877-500-KBOO. That's 5266.
You know, I think you have an excellent point. I love the idea of buying gift memberships to share information for family members. that maybe are feeling a little isolated, a little alone. Maybe they moved away, but they can still listen through the internet. And, you know, get them a gift membership and help them feel connected to Portland. I love the fact that we have an old member, David, who is now in Santa Barbara, who called in with a membership saying he's still a Portlander at heart. You know, if you have someone that you just know you've always had these disagreements with, but if only they could access this kind of information, you know, maybe you could see eye to eye a little bit more. That's another great reason to give a gift membership to KABU Community Radio, 503-232-8818. Again, 503-232-8818.
You know, I send my mom, when we're done with shows, I send her CDs of the shows, and I've sent her things that I've been kind of on the fence about, wondering if she would say, "What are you doing out there?" Or, you know, something might be a little too radical for her or whatever, but pretty much consistently, she's like, "I really, really love that show. I really love what you're doing." And that's amazing, and it makes you, it helps you get to know people better when you can have those conversations. And turning people on to KABU is how you start those conversations going. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You can also sign people up on the web at KABU.fm. And you can access the show all over the world.
503-232-8818. We got a call right now. We're looking to raise $360 before 7 o'clock tonight. We can do it with collective action. I love that. I love that about KABU. It takes everybody doing their part to make this station go and to keep it growing strong. 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818. And I want to thank Aaron in Portland, and I want to thank Zen Hardwood Floors in Portland for contributing to KABU, for joining, for re-upping their memberships. We thank you all.
And KABU really does open up the world and bring it to you. You can just stay home and it all comes to you. You know, I always say I don't get the Oregonian for my news. I get it for the crossword puzzle. And I tune to KABU for my news. I listen to Circle A Radio and I listen to the KABU news in the morning and in the evening with all the commentary and the music breaks in between. It really brings everyone just to me, and so I'm really happy to be a KABU member. I finally took the plunge after supporting KABU and with, you know, friendships and listening to it while we're making dinner. And one of the things I wanted to say was, if you live in a household like mine, it's a large house, lots of people live there, keep a jar out on your table. Label it KABU, lock it up, and then at the end of the year, empty that jar of change, and you'll be surprised how much is in there, and you can just take that jar right down to KABU, because we don't always have $60, especially if you're a DIY Circle A radio listener. You may be living a DIY lifestyle.
But, you know, it does add up over the course of that year. You can bring it down, but call in your pledge now, 503-232-8818. Back to Circle A.
We are speaking with Loretta Ross, National Coordinator of the Sister Song Women of Color Reproductive Health Collective, based in Atlanta, Georgia.
I read an article of yours that's a little bit older about white supremacy and how this anti-immigrant sentiment that's being used by a lot of politicians right now fits into other hate ideology that's tied into white supremacy.
The white supremacist movement is a long-standing movement. It's nothing new in America. I mean, my friend Dandy Smith, who's an indigenous activist, keeps reminding me we need to not say America is at war. America is war. And that really talks about the project that certain people have had to keep this as a settled country with people of European descent as the dominant people in this country. And so from 1872 on, we've had a series of anti-immigration laws, starting with something I think was called the Page Laws, that first prohibited people of Asian descent coming into this country. But then in the 1920s, I think it was 1924, we had another set of laws that
really targeted all non-white immigration into this country. And those laws didn't get released or at least lifted a little bit until the 1960s. And so since the 1960s, we have had increasing non-white immigration into this country. And now there's a lot of nativists, a lot of white supremacists who are saying now we need to build a fence across the border with Mexico and what have you. And I should also add, my definition of white supremacy is not limited to the boys in the hood. I mean, this is way beyond the Ku Klux Klan, because I find it hard to even watch CNN and Lou Dobbs, because he's on a tirade about immigrants and what's happening in our country because of immigrants. There's been many, many articles talking about the browning of America and how horrible that is. And so white supremacy goes from the margins to the mainstream when you talk about the prosecution and persecution of immigrants. And we're always talking about immigrants of color. So it really does reflect that white supremacist construct.
We actually have a gubernatorial candidate in Oregon who's running very much on that platform. And I think one thing you pointed out is that people don't have to claim that they're racist when they're supporting these same racist policies.
Well, it does allow convenient cover. I mean, but that's part of the strategy or the success of the white supremacist movement. The formal members of the Nazi movement or the Ku Klux Klan, they're the source of many of the ideas that through time and repetition become mainstream public policy. I mean, they were the ones first in total resistance to affirmative action when affirmative action was first broached in the 1960s. Well, now you end up with anti-affirmative action public policies. They were the ones in the 1950s when an increasing number of people of color were receiving public assistance or welfare, who suddenly started saying that we can no longer afford to have hard-working white people taking care of all these poor, shiftless brown and black people. Well, in 1996, we get the Personal Responsibility Act out of President Clinton. And so one of the reasons that I pay very careful attention to what the white supremacists on the formal side say is that over time, that will become mainstream public policy. I would say, first of all, that the main difference between the North and the South in terms of racism is a matter of style, as opposed to whether or not it exists. In the North, I call it the kindler, gentler kind of racism that still exoticizes and objectifies people of color, but doesn't come out in the blatant, overt form that we could often experience in the South. I live in Georgia, and our state is still in the midst of a fight about retaining the Confederate battle flag as our state flag. So that sounds like a little anachronous. It really is, because we are fighting people who think they should have another chance to fight the Civil War, and maybe they'll win again. And it's a real throwback kind of upfront struggle, because you know what you're dealing with when you got that kind of upfront struggle. But the subtler, more covert forms of racism really can be harder both to discern and to counter, because it is disguised in a lot of gentler ways. But I'm also fairly clear about distinguishing between the racism that is the result of someone not giving interracial kindergarten lessons. I mean, someone saying something like, oh, I love your hair, do you wash it? I mean, that to me is racist, but it doesn't hurt nearly as bad as someone who is intentionally painful or is intentionally harmful. So I don't read all racism the same. I recognize that I live in a white supremacist country where people don't get interracial politeness lessons along with their schooling. So sometimes you have to become an adult and learn how to be with people who are different. It is a matter of degree and style, the difference between the North and the South. And we Southerners, we kind of prefer the more blatant, overt kind, because then we know what we're dealing with. In many ways, it's akin to how a newer generation of men are handling sexism. I was at a Boston Social Forum as part of the World Social Forum processes, And this young man who was in charge of the forum, this young white guy, was adamant that there would not be any women on this plenary panel, the closing plenary panel. And he was taking the position that he was not sexist because he'd been through women's studies. He knew he was not sexist. He just thought that the panel should be the way he wanted it to be, and despite all the hundreds of women in his face saying, you will not leave us out. And this was only 2 years ago. So I would imagine resistance to recognizing racism is akin to men being resistant to recognizing sexism because they think they know everything they need to know already and really don't want to hear the voices of the others.
I had read a little bit about how you were talking about how the white supremacy movement wasn't just the good old boys anymore. Increasingly, the ranks were becoming filled with young people, women, etc. What's going to happen when two grassroots movements run into each other?
You can call me naive or you can call me an optimist, but I have actually worked with people in the Ku Klux Klan, in the militia movement, in the hate group movement, working on deprogramming them. And one of the things that I find is that they don't have a secure hold on the minds of their people or their young people, as they like to think. The march of time kind of betrays them. It's very, very hard to impose a 18th or 19th century framework on the 21st century. It's just very, very hard. And that's why they have to be so adamant in their brainwashing of people about holding values about how women should be treated, how young people should be treated, about how, you know, the country should be run, because they really are fighting the march of time. I don't think that when the clash of young generations happen that we're going to be as badly off as their disproportionate finances and power make us think. I actually am seeing over and over again young people who were brought up in extremely conservative or uber-religious households rejecting that and saying, no, I am not about to be a soldier of intolerance. I live in a diverse world. I'm in communication with people around the world through the Internet, through MySpace, and I simply can't be as close-minded as the people want me to be. We'll always have a dangerous set of people who are willing to go to any length to get their way. We call those people terrorists. But I do believe that history's on our side. I believe that technology and communication and transportation is on our side. And you just can't successfully keep ideas out of people's minds. I'm not that worried about whether or not there's going to be a resurgence of victory of the narrow-minded people. I think we're going to have a bitter fight about it, but I don't think they're going to win. For a while, I served on Pacifica's board of directors, so I have been involved in community media for a while, and I certainly appreciate the fact that we often can only get the news that matters from community media. The news, the truth that no one else in the mainstream media dares to tell. And I've often watched very important stories percolate up from community media until the mainstream media pays attention and suddenly they discover the government was involved in distributing crack cocaine in black neighborhoods or what have you. What I'm also pleased to see is the emergence of a media and democracy movement where there is a direct relationship made between media activists and the health and the state of our democracy, and recognizing the vital role that community media plays in helping us to protect our democracy and to protect our human rights. Now, what I wish could happen in community media on the flip side is more cooperation and collaboration. Too often, we don't spend enough time figuring out how to work together, but we see considerable amount of collaboration and cooperation amongst people who are opposed to human rights. So why is there more among people on our side?
The more we can do that, the better off I think we'll be. And I think we need the community media, and in particular community radio, because so many of our people get their news through the radio as a way of keeping that eternal vigilance that Thomas Jefferson talked about. Without community media, we would be even closer to a neo-fascist society, because we cannot trust the news that we get from corporate-controlled media. They have no problem staying in business, but they seem to have a little problem staying in journalism. And so we have to count on the investigative reporters within community media to tell us the truth, because it's the news we trust.
Yeah, that's right. That's your special Circle A infomercial by Loretta Ross. And it's true. Without community radio, we would be closer to a neo-fascist society. I don't think you could really convince me that we're not there right now. But I think that community radio is at least going to get us having some different kinds of conversations. For example, when you talk about reproductive freedom, the discourse always among white folks starts going toward abortion, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about some other types of reproductive freedom, and I think those are the kinds of things we need to talk about here. I think it's important to keep us going and keep us talking and keep voices like Loretta Ross on Circle A Radio and on KBOO by calling 503-232-8818. That's 1-877-500-5266 if you're outside of the Portland area.
That's right. Thanks so much, Jody. This is Ani, and now I'm here with Aaron. And we are, again, telling you this is your moment to join KBOO, your very own community radio station. Make it your own when you dial 503-232-8818. And we are looking like we need to raise over $300. We can do it. $300, easy to do. $5 a month. Think about giving $5 a month. Adds up to $60 in the course of a year. Right now, just stop what you're doing for just a moment and say you're inspired. You're inspired by this interview that you're hearing with Loretta Ross. I was thinking about the different things that I have heard on Circle A over the last few months, last 6 months. You know, there was great information over the last year on Katrina, on police abuse, on gentrification, on Rob Los Ricos' political prisoner that was released this summer. There have been great interviews, great information, great voices of resistance. That's why it's worth your call right now, 503-232-8818.
Well, I know you're impressed by Circle A being all volunteers and being produced every other week for everybody, and I'm sure that the volunteers here would be duly impressed if we got some calls from Linton or the Montevilla neighborhood, Lintz. Maybe you're in White Salmon, and then you can dial 1-877-500-KBOO. That's 5266. Or you're on the internet, which would be even more exciting if you were off in a faraway land, www.kboo.fm. And if you're local, 503-232-8818.
That's right. Wherever you are, you know KBOO is a part of your community, that we seek to empower, to inform, to inspire and enliven you to take the right action. It's in our mission, actually, that the values that KBOO operates for on and off the air are peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. This is a part of social change. It's active participation. It doesn't do any good to just sort of sit back while this country slides ever more to the right. It doesn't do any good to just sit back and go, man, this is horrible, and get ever more cynical and ever more jaded. It is the time to actually be a part of something actually moving towards resistance, actually saying no to the actions of this government, actually saying we can be about making a better world together. Be a part of that better world. 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818.
And you know what? It's not easy making this kind of programming either. Come on. You know, I'm sitting here. I'm not hearing the phones ringing. We spend a lot of time putting the show together. It's a lot of blood, sweat, tears. You know, we're busy people. We're real busy people. And we end up spending, what, 40 hours a week sometimes putting these shows together for you people. So if we don't hear the phones ring, you know,
it's, then you're going to have to answer to Jody.
You're, you know, I got a cousin Vinny in Jersey who's going to outfit you for some cement sneakers. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You don't want to pee off the Circle A girls. That's all I'm saying.
They know where you live.
they have that naughty or nice, that long list. They share it with Santa Claus. I've seen it.
There was a program on earlier today that was talking about how to get rid of slugs in your garden. Then after that, there was Democracy Now. After that, Noam Chomsky was on. And then in the evening, you have Circle A Radio. And if you think you can find this anywhere else, you are wrong. And
I challenge you. Where else have you had this information today?
503-232-8818. And we really need to hear the phones ringing because Jody and Aaron are taking off on a trip together today, and they might be a little mad in the airplane if they don't get some calls in. 232-8818.
There you go. 1-877-500-5266. This is about community. This is about family. This is about us taking care of each other. You need to take care of your family. You need to take care of your community. Support us. 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818. We're about $15,000 behind this overall goal for our membership drive this fall. And I know right now we can turn that around. It all begins with you. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Sounds like people know what's good for them. That sounds real good out there in the membership central. I like the way that sounds.
Jody sings.
You were speaking about the South. You are also, is it the regional coordinator for the U.S. Social Forum?
Well, I'm the national women's coordinator. We've decided within the U.S. Social Forum process to do some intentional work on ensuring that the voices of women are included into the social forum, that it's not an add-on or an afterthought, but it's integrated very seamlessly throughout the entire process. What we've experienced in past social forums is that women are included, so I won't say that they're excluded, but the women who are included are not included because they're addressing gender issues. They're included because they're addressing the privatization of water or workers' rights or globalization or a whole host of wonderful issues. So it's a interesting paradox where you have a lot of women speaking, but no one speaking to the particular gender issues that women experience. And so we want to make sure with this U.S. Social Forum, which will be held here in Atlanta starting next June 27th, that the perspectives of women as women are included top to bottom and in every aspect of the forum. And I should also add the perspectives of LGBT activists as well as young people, so that they're not just added as an afterthought.
Can you also address the importance and the significance of having the U.S. Social Forum take place in the South?
For us, it is extremely important to turn the world's eye to the situation in the South. As a matter of fact, the forum was supposed to be last year, but we had to postpone it for a year because of the Katrina disaster, because there was just so many of our activists in our base who were devastated by that disaster, whether they actually lived in the Gulf Coast or just took in the displaced people from the Gulf Coast. We felt that having a forum in the South would turn the world's attention to all the injustices that we live with routinely
but that are usually hidden from global view. Because when you travel around the world, you still encounter surprise that America has problems with race, surprise that there are people of color in the United States. When you hear the word American, they think white. We're not doing a good job talking about the pluralism of our society and the diversity of our society. And particularly when the only thing they know about our country is obtained through the mass media, then of course they have these very distorted ideas of what goes on in this country. So having the social forum in the Deep South, and we're going to really feature prominently the voices of people from the Katrina disaster, we think will serve notice to the world that America does violate the human rights of its own citizens. But while it tries to offer criticism of what other countries are doing, it is managing to violate over and over again the human rights of its own people. And of course, I don't need to tell you about why we can go to Iraq and rebuild democracy, but we can't rebuild New Orleans a year or something after this death.
I just went to the World Social Forum in Venezuela in January of 2006, and the message of that World Social Forum is another world is possible. And so the organizers of the forum had the initial intent, and I think this is the intent of all World Social Forums, to create a model for the change that we want to see in the world. And so I was just wondering if you could comment on what you think those potential solutions are and whether they'll be featured in the U.S. Social Forum.
My best hope for the future is to hope that America really embraces the human rights framework and understands what that means. And it's way beyond the tortured political prisoner people are familiar with when you say the phrase human rights, but our right to clean water that hasn't been privatized, our right to food, our right to housing, our right to health care, education, our right to freedom of speech, our right to not have a Patriot Act that's invading our privacy and monitoring our political activities. All of these are human rights that our country is in denial that we should enjoy, that we deserve simply because we are human. And so I'm hoping that activists in the United States stop practicing our own form of American exceptionalism and join the global human rights movement. People have used the human rights framework very successfully to create a coherent demand for all of their human rights so that they're not having to choose between freedom of speech or freedom from starvation, but understanding how interconnected those two concepts are. We don't enjoy that in the United States right now. 97% of the American public hasn't even heard of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And so it's very hard to fight for rights of which you're unaware. So I'm hoping that the activists who come to the U.S. Social Forum, and we are saying another America is possible, that we understand that if you're in the women's movement, well, you're fighting for the human rights of women. If you care about the environment, we're fighting for the human rights of all of us to have a clean environment. That we are different sectors of the same movement rather than the individualized single issue movements that we're currently organized in. Right now, we're the divided and the conquered. We are not showing the unity we need in order to beat back the anti-human rights movement. Sister Song was founded really to fulfill a need for the voices of women of color to be nationally organized so that we could get our needs met. When we first started in 1997, we found that we were trying to address reproductive health issues in our community, but many of the issues that we were finding out about weren't being researched. At the time, when you went to the CDC or the National Institutes of Health for data on health issues in communities of color, there would be black, white, Hispanic, and then other. And everybody else was grouped into other. So, of course, we were dealing with an Asian Pacific Islander population of more than 17 subgroups. Indigenous women were invisible. And even amongst the populations that they had, they needed some subgroup breakdown. I mean, because the experience of black women born in America and African immigrants from the Caribbean or South Latin America or Africa is decidedly different. And so we had to first address the lack of data. And we live in a world where if you can't prove it, it doesn't exist. And then we had to address the lack of funding. For every year we were being organized, one of our organizations has folded because of lack of support. And yet we see other organizations that claim to serve communities of color winning most of the foundation support. So we wanted to challenge that and say, why would you trust a white organization that has a Women of Color project to do better work than the Women of Color organization embedded in the community? We've had to band together so that we could do collectively what we couldn't do individually. Now, what we do is characterized by three things. We support women of color by having conferences and meetings so that women of color can work together to strategize on building a national women of color reproductive health movement. Secondly, we mentor women of color. There's a lot of parts of this country where women of color have not yet been organized to protect their reproductive health. And so we help new organizations get formed. We provide capacity building training for our new organizations. And then the third major strategy we employ is to advocate for women of color. So if there's a policy or a piece of legislation that's up at either the federal or the state level, we make sure that the voices and the perspectives of women of color are entered into that debate so that the Violence Against Women's Bill, for example, doesn't get reauthorized, excluding immigrant women from being protected from it or what have you. And so we support women of color, we mentor women of color, we advocate for women of color. Now, in that vein, we decided a couple of years ago that we are in a culture that is almost prohibitionist in its treatment of sex and sexuality. That you've got the people on the right saying, just say no. And we all know just say no doesn't work. I mean, my mother's idea of birth control was holding a Bible between my knees. But at the same time, even the people who say that they're on the left are basically taking the Hillary Clinton line. We think abortion is a tragedy, so it should be safe, it should be legal, and it should be never, basically. So we're going to promote contraception, and we're going to promote sex education, and we really don't like abortion. So what we found within Sister Song is that that left a void, because if you got the people on the right being anti-sex, and you got the people on the left saying young people don't have a right to a healthy sexuality, well, as one person said to us, everybody's telling us what not to do. Nobody's telling us what to do. We decided to hold our first pro-sex conference next year, May 31st to June 3rd in Chicago. We're holding a conference called Let's Talk About Sex. And we're going to talk about positive sex and sexuality, because we don't believe that sex should be only for procreation. It is your human right to have sex for pleasure, for non-procreative rights, and we believe in the rights of young people to have a healthy and positive sexuality. Got a lack of intergenerational dialogue so that young people don't know how to talk to their parents about sex and parents don't know how to talk to young people about sex. I mean, you got even a lot of providers, healthcare providers, that don't know how to talk to their patients about sex. So we've got to restore positive, healthy conversations about sex onto the radar. And the paradox of this situation is that while there are no healthy conversations about sex, everything from mouthwash to blue jeans to cars is sexualized in order to sell it to us. So our young people are bombarded with sexual imagery, but forbidden to talk about healthy sex. And that's just stupid. So we're having Let's Talk About Sex next year. Sister Song, I should add, though, was founded by women of color. In 2003, we opened our ranks so anybody can join Sister Song. Any organization that serves the interests of community of color. We have our white allies section within Sister Song. We have white organizations who are allied to Sister Song. And we want just everybody who wants to talk about sex to come to the conference. But we can talk about sex in a way that's healthy, respectful, and include all the populations of folks who need to talk about healthy sexuality. More information on that is on our website at www.sistersong.net. And we will be offering what we call mother-daughter scholarships. So if you're a young woman coming, you can get a scholarship to bring your mother. And if you're a mother coming, you can get a scholarship to bring your daughter if your daughter's 12 years old or older.
All right, and this is Trillium. I'm one of the proud Circle A ladies, and we're really happy to be here with you at the Fall Membership Drive. The numbers to call are 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Call now. Don't delay. We still have one more segment coming up, and I have with me three guests. I'm so excited. Mo and Aaron and Mirabai are here to tell you why you need to pick up that phone right now and call. Welcome.
Thanks, Trillium. Well, basically, why is Trillium is a volunteer. Aaron is a volunteer. Hannah, who's part of Circle A, is a volunteer. Jody's a volunteer. They're not getting paid to do their show, and they are getting news out to you and stories and public affairs out to you that no one hears about.
And we have one more new Circle A lady, Shizuko,
who
is hearing tonight on the show. So another volunteer to add to that list.
All volunteers.
And there's still $270 to meet the goal for this segment, and so if you want to just call in and do all $270, that'd be great. Or if you can afford 20, 40, or 60, or whatever else, call in 503-232-8818. And Mirabai, what's the number if you're outside of Portland?
1-877-500-KBOO, which is 5266.
All right, and you know what? It's really easy. I give a monthly deduction from my checking account, and I don't even feel it, except I feel really happy to be giving to KBOO. So besides volunteering, we all give a little bit of a cash kick down. Many people like to do it on a monthly basis, and if we could just get two people to call in and do that pledge, we'd be almost at our goal, and we could get on with the show. So call 503-232-8818. Don't delay. It's not a big deal. $10. You probably spend it on movies every month, beer, other things, and this is a valuable asset to your community. So,
and if you're like me or many other anarchist-leaning type of Circle A radio listeners and you don't have a checking account, put a quarter in a jar every day. Find a quarter when you're cleaning the kitchen. I mean, you can just walk around your punk house and you'll find money. Put it in a jar. At the end of the year, you've got $100 to give to KBOO. That's 27 cents a day.
Go clean out that couch right now and tell us how much you get. You can call and pledge what you find under the cushions. We'll take any amount. And that's one of the things I like about Circle A is we do get a lot of people calling in with $5 and $10 pledges, and we know that's what they can give. And thank you for calling in with any pledge amount, because that's what it's about. All of us in this community can give at different levels, but the important part is to take the time to call 503-232-8818 and pledge your support to KBOO. It's an amazing community resource. I think that Aaron can tell you more about that.
Well, you want to join Lori in Portland, Marisa in Portland, and Pam in Portland. And Pam says Circle A is her favorite show, exclamation point. So join them and reach the $360 goal for this hour. And go beyond that. Give as much as you can or as little as you can, whatever you can afford.
You know, the other month I bought a vacuum cleaner, and that lasted me about 3 months, and then it broke. So, you know, there's a lot of ways we can spend our money unwisely and spend our money on things that aren't going to last us any more than a year. But, you know, if you give some money to KBOO, that's going to sustain you for your entire experience here in Portland. It's going to sustain others. It's going to sustain your community, and that's a real solid investment. 503-232-8818 is is the magic number, or 1-877-500-5266 in the outlying areas.
And if you just think about going to a film, even if you go to the Laurelhurst, that's $3 for a movie, or you could sit down and listen to the programming in the evenings on Wednesdays. So you get your Circle A radio, and that's free. It's coming into your house, so put $3 a day aside for your entertainment budget, and you'll be surprised at how much that adds up. I mean, that's over $1,000 a year. Just think about how much you spend at the video store or for whatever entertainment, and you could be listening to the shows you already listening to and knowing that you're contributing to it. So give us a call. What's the number, Mirabai?
503-232-8818 if you're in Portland, and if you are outside of Portland, it's 1-877-500-KBOO, which is 5266.
And that's, we're also issuing a challenge to all the other students at Trillium Charter School, where Mirabai is a student of one of the only 5 charter schools that purchased land, and she just moved into their new school. So any other students of Trillium, bug your parents, tell them you want to get down to KBOO and get involved just like Mirabai is, and give us a call and pledge a little money, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
And we're going to go back to our programming, but please call during this last segment because we hate it when we don't make our goal. Just call 503-231-8818 and thank you in advance for your support.
We return to our conversation with Loretta Ross, National Coordinator of the Sister Song Women of Color Reproductive Health Collective.
Who are some of the people who have inspired the work that you do?
Well, the people who have inspired me, I'm lucky that most of them are still alive. I mean, I guess there are role models back in time and Harriet Tubman and those kinds of folks, but I've stood on the shoulders of people I've had the privilege of working on. I mean, the woman who convinced me to come to the D.C. Rape Crisis Center is named Nkenji Ture, and she was a member of the Black Panther Party at the time. And at the time, I thought it was so cool, and I was doubtful. I thought, I don't know if I want to go work with those white women. That was my thing. And then I thought about it, well, if a member of the Black Panther says it's okay, then it got to be okay. And I've never regretted that she brought me to the women's movement. And she still remains as one of my role models. Another person that I'm quite proud to be working with is a man named Abdullahi Al-Naheem. Abdullahi is a law professor at Emory University, but he was a political prisoner in the Sudan for a number of years until Amnesty International launched a campaign that got him freed. And Abdullahi, despite being tortured in a Sudanese jail for over 7 years, is the most upbeat, positive person you ever wanted to meet. And I just love the way that he has this tremendous energy and zest for life, even though he spent a lot of time in jail. And I think the last person, I mean, there's many I could name, but the person that comes to mind also is this Jewish guy named Leonard Zeskin. We call him Mini Zeskin. He was my mentor in my Fight the Right work. One of the things Lenny told me that I'll never forget, he said, you've got to approach this work with joy. I said, well, what do you mean, Lenny? He says, well, being a Nazi should not be fun, but fighting them should be. And I said, oh, okay. So even as you spend your time as an activist looking at the underbelly of America, you really have to keep in mind that this is the fun part. Being the underbelly has to be the ugly part. If you want to know more about the reproductive justice analysis that I briefly mentioned, there is a book that I've co-written with 3 other women called Undivided Rights, Women of Color Organized for Reproductive Justice. And my co-authors are Marlene Free, Yael Silliman, and Elena Gutierrez. And so for those of you who want to read more and learn more about this framework, I invite you to get Undivided Rights because it's a good way
to understand the history of the women of color movement in this country and why we use the reproductive justice framework.
You can learn more about Sister Song by visiting www.sistersong.net. The U.S. Social Forum is scheduled for June 27th through July 1st, 2007, in Atlanta, Georgia. 20,000 participants are expected to convene to build a broader national movement for social justice around the world. It will be the largest gathering of progressives in over a decade, drawing participants from different regions, ethnicities, sectors, and ages. Community-based organizations, indigenous nations, unions, academics, policy and advocacy organizations will come together for dialogue, reflection, and to define future strategies. For more information on the United States Social Forum, visit www.ussf2007.org.
Thanks to Loretta Ross and to the members of KABU who support our program and our station.
Circle A Radio airs every first and third Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. If you have questions or comments, email us at info@circlearadio.org.
Our next show airs November 1st.
Thanks for listening.
And it is 7 o'clock. Thanks for listening to Circle A Radio. Stay tuned next.